Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We're here to help you make sense of complex information, turning it into insights you can actually use.
That's the goal.
And today, we're really digging into the NZ Incident Response Bulletin, September 2025 Standard Edition. It's quite comprehensive.
It is. It covers a lot of ground.
Our mission, as always, is to cut through the noise, find those essential nuggets you need. We'll look at recent breaches, attacker tactics, and then really get into this important shift beyond just passwords.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this bulletin, I think, is how it connects the dots. It's not just isolated events.
Right.
It shows this evolving landscape. So we're not just reporting news. We want to help you see the patterns, prepare, and get some genuinely actionable stuff out of this.
Okay, let's jump in. Starting close to home here in New Zealand, the bulletin highlights this NCSC survey. That's the National Cybersecurity Center.
Mm-hmm.
And it found, get this, over half of NZ's small and medium businesses, the SMEs, have experienced cyber threats.
That's a huge number.
It is. But despite that, many are still, well, underprepared, not investing enough. They're seeing phishing, malware, you know, unauthorized access attempts, the usual suspects, but still damaging.
And this SME vulnerability, it's not just an NZ thing, it's global. Attackers often go for easier targets, right?
Makes sense.
What the NCSC report really drives home, beyond the basics like MFA and updates, which are vital, obviously, is this idea of cascading risk.
Cascading risk?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Well, many smaller places don't quite grasp how one compromised laptop, one weak link, can basically open the door to their entire supply chain.
Okay, so they become an entry point for bigger attacks.
Exactly. They might not think they're a major target, but they can be a stepping stone. So the NCSC is really pushing for a shift, you know, from just reacting to actually building proactive foundational security, recognizing that interconnectedness.
That makes a lot of sense. Moving away from constant firefighting. And look, it's not just SMEs feeling the heat. The bulletin points to critical infrastructure, too. Telecommunications, specifically. Some pretty alarming incidents in the UK and Australia.
Yeah, this stood out.
In the UK, Colt, a big telecom operator, got hit by that Warlock ransomware gang.
Right, Warlock. Nasty stuff.
Yeah, they had to shut down business support systems preemptively. Significant disruption.
Mm-hmm.
Then you hop over to Australia, and iNet, part of TPG Group, had unauthorized access to their order management system.
And how did they get in there?
Compromised employee credentials. That's the key.
Ah, the human element again.
Always. This hit about 280,000 people. Exposed phone numbers, addresses, even around 1,700 modem passwords.
Ouch, modem passwords too.
Yeah. Thankfully, the report says no identity docs or bank details, but still, that's a major breach.
These two incidents together really paint a clear picture, don't they? Telecoms are prime targets.
High value, definitely.
And the weak points. Often third parties, or like you said, employee credentials being compromised, it really underlines the need for, well, better detection of data actually leaving the network, stronger access controls, more than just passwords and that real-time monitoring.
And acting fast when something does happen, coordinating with regulators.
Absolutely. Which, speaking of regulators,
leads us right into the next point. The Australian Information Commissioner, the OAIC, taking action against Optus.
Yes, over that huge 2022 breach. This is significant.
What's the core allegation?
Basically, that Optus didn't take reasonable steps to protect customer data. They held on to personal info longer than needed and didn't secure it properly.
So it's about data handling and security.
Exactly. And the implication here, the so what for everyone listening, it's the rising cost of getting this wrong. Non-compliance is getting expensive.
It's not just a slap on the wrist anymore.
No way. Regulators are serious. It forces companies to really focus on proactive data governance, knowing what data you have, why, how long you keep it, how you protect it, and how you get rid of it safely. Not just bolting on security at the end.
Data lifecycle management, yeah. Plus being transparent when breaches happen.
Right. Alignment with privacy laws is non-negotiable now.
Okay, so we've seen the risks, the regulatory heat.
Yeah.
But it's not all bad news, right? The bulletin does share some positive developments.
Thankfully, yes. It's important to see where progress is being made.
Like this Africa Cyber Surge Thur operation? Sounds major.
It was a big international effort, 25 countries working with Interpol.
And the results.
Pretty impressive. They dismantled some large cybercrime and fraud networks, made 14 arrests, identified over 20,000 suspicious networks, and seized nearly $3 million U.S. dollars in illicit assets. Shows what happens when law enforcement collaborates across borders.
That's huge. And then closer to home, ANZ Bank in Australia reported some good news on scams.
Yeah, a 15% drop in financial losses from scams between late 2024 and mid-2025.
And that's on top of a big drop before that, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. A 49% reduction previously. So they're making real headway.
How are they doing it?
It seems to be a mix. New tools, like this digital padlock thing.
A kill switch for account.
Sort of, yeah. Quick way to lock things down. Plus, customers actually using the security features more and better education efforts. It's that combination.
Technology, behavior, awareness.
Exactly. It shows you can make a tangible difference. It takes effort on multiple fronts, but it works.
Okay, good to hear some wins. Now let's shift gears a bit. The bulletin also touches on the bigger picture, the strategic stuff, geopolitics.
Right, because cyber isn't just crime anymore, it's statecraft too.
And New Zealand's taken a significant step here, formally joining allies like the US and UK in attributing malicious cyber activity to APT 40.
Which is widely linked to China's Ministry of State Security.
Yes. So what exactly was APT 40 doing?
Widespread intrusions, targeting governments, critical infrastructure, private companies, globally.
And NZ's involvement. Did they find breaches here?
Our GCSB, that's the Government Communications Security Bureau, confirmed local networks were scanned by APT 40, but they say no significant breaches were reported here from that specific campaign.
Okay.
But the act of attributing it publicly, alongside allies, that's the key shift. It signals NZ aligning more closely on calling out state-sponsored threats. Minister Judith Collins emphasized defending democracy and boosting international cooperation.
That's a strong statement. But, you know, does publicly blaming a state actor like this actually stop them? Or does it just raise the temperature?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's probably a bit of both. Direct deterrence in cyberspace is tricky.
Right.
But public attribution does a few things. It sends a diplomatic message. It helps establish norms of behavior, what's acceptable and what's not. And crucially, it encourages information sharing and collective defense among allies.
So making it harder for them to operate in the shadows.
Exactly. It raises the political cost for the attacker, even if it doesn't stop every single intrusion immediately. It strengthens that collective defense posture.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a strategic move as much as a technical one.
Definitely. And this isn't happening in a vacuum. Look at Australia, their financial regulator, APRA.
The Australian Prudential Regulation Authority.
Right. They're explicitly warning banks that rising geopolitical tensions could mean more cyber attacks targeting Australia's financial sector.
So they expect state-sponsored or politically motivated attacks.
Yes. They're telling banks to ramp up their cyber risk planning, do more stress testing specifically for these kinds of cross-border threats.
It really drives home that cyber risk isn't just an IT problem anymore.
Not at all. It's strategic, it's economic, it's tied directly to global tensions. This awareness is forcing a much more strategic, almost national security level approach to cyber defense. You have to consider state actors, not just criminals.
Looking at the whole global chessboard, as you said.
Precisely.
Okay, so that sets the stage for, I think, the most crucial part of this bulletin, especially for day-to-day security. Mm. It poses a fundamental question. We all focus on strong passwords. We implement multi-factor authentication, MFA. Isn't that enough?
And the bulletin's answer is a very clear, very direct no.
No. But that's been the mantra for years.
It has. And passwords and MFA are still vital, absolutely foundational. But the bulletin says they're now the bare minimum.
Bare minimum. Why?
Because attackers are smart. They adapt. They're increasingly shifting their focus away from just cracking or stealing your password and MFA code.
Right.
And focusing instead on exploiting the device you're using to log in. The laptop, the phone, the tablet.
Ah. So even if I authenticate correctly, the thing I'm using might be compromised.
Exactly. And the bulletin gives a couple of really stark examples of how this works.
Let's hear them.
Okay. Breach scenario one. An employee uses their personal laptop, maybe unmanaged, not company issued, to log into corporate email. They use their password, they use their MFA code, everything looks good.
Right. Standard practice for many.
But unbeknownst to them, that personal laptop has malware on it. That malware can potentially steal the session token.
The session token.
Yeah.
Like the temporary key you get after logging in.
Precisely. And once the attacker has that token, they can often bypass MFA entirely for that session. They can ride along on the legitimate login.
Whoa. So MFA didn't help after the initial login because the device itself was bad.
Correct. Now, scenario two. An attacker successfully phishes an employee. They get the username, the password, and the MFA code, maybe through a convincing fake login page.
Okay, classic phishing.
Now, the attacker takes those stolen credentials and tries to log in from their own machine somewhere else entirely.
And because they have the valid credentials and the MFA code.
The system might just let them in. It authenticates the who correctly,
yeah.
But it has no idea that the login is coming from an untrusted, potentially malicious device.
That's a huge blind spot.
It is. If you only check the user's identity, but not the health or trustworthiness of the device they're using, you're missing a critical piece of the puzzle.
So what's the answer then? How do we close that gap?
This is where the bulletin really dives into device filtering. You might also hear it called context-aware access.
Device filtering. Okay, break that down for us.
Essentially, it's about adding another layer of rules based on the device itself. Should this particular device even be allowed to access corporate data?
So checking the what's as well as the who.
Exactly. And it's not just a simple yes-no. Maybe for personal devices or ones a company doesn't manage, access is limited. Like you can read email on the web, but you can't download attachments.
Or maybe require extra checks for higher risk devices.
Right. More frequent reauthentication, proof that it's encrypted, up to date, or maybe blocking it altogether if it doesn't meet certain baseline security standards. It's about applying policy based on device context.
It sounds much more nuanced than just allow deny.
It is. It brings the what, the device's posture, its health, its compliance into the access decision alongside the who, the user's verified identity. It asks, okay, we know who you are, but are you logging in from a safe place?
And are the big tech players enabling this?
Oh, yeah. The bulletin mentions Microsoft's identity platform, Azure AD, or Entra ID now. It lets organizations set policies to include or exclude devices based on type, ownership, like corporate versus personal or compliance status.
So you could say full access only from managed compliant corporate laptops.
Precisely. And maybe a personal phone only gets web access to certain apps.
And Google.
Google has its context-aware access. Similar idea. Set rules like you can only get into Google Drive or Gmail if your device is encrypted, running the latest OS version, and registered with us.
So a contractor using their own machine might only get web access, no downloads.
Exactly, that kind of granular control. It's way more flexible than just relying on the login credentials alone. It adapts to how people actually work now with different devices in different locations.
It sounds powerful, but probably complex to manage. What does the bulletin say about actually implementing this effectively? Governance must be key.
Absolutely crucial. And the bulletin lays out some key recommendations. First, keep policies clear and manageable. Don't create a tangled mess of overlapping rules. Simplify, name them logically, review them often.
Avoid that policy spaghetti.
Right. Second, manage exceptions tightly. Every time you make an exception for a contractor, a special account, whatever, it's a potential risk. Document it, get the right level of approval, and crucially, revisit those exceptions regularly. Don't let them become permanent backdoors through creeping risk.
Good point.
What else? Yeah. Third, cover everyone and everything. Don't just focus on employees. Extend these rules to guest accounts, third-party vendors, automated system accounts, even those old legacy apps that often fly under the radar. No blind spots.
Makes sense. Have to cover the whole attack surface.
Fourth, you actually need proper device management for this to work. You can't filter devices if you don't know what they are or if they're compliant.
So, maintain an accurate inventory of company devices.
Yes. Know what you own, make sure they're patched, encrypted, meeting standards, and have clear rules for personal devices accessing work data, BYOD.
Know your assets. And the last one.
Monitor effectiveness and demand reporting. This isn't set and forget. Boards, executives, they need to ask for metrics.
Like what?
How many sign-ins got blocked because the device wasn't compliant? How many unmanaged devices are still hitting sensitive systems? How often are those emergency break glass accounts being used?
So proving the controls are actually working and are aligned with how much risk the organization is willing to accept.
Exactly. It's about continuous verification and improvement.
Okay, this really feels like a fundamental shift. The bulletin's core message seems to be, It's not just about identity anymore.
That's the heart of it. The move from identity-only security, just passwords, even with MFA, to identity plus device trust is now essential. It's not just who's logging in, but what they are logging in from. Is that device trustworthy?
Trusting nothing, verifying everything, user and device.
That's the zero trust principle in action, yeah. Applied right down to the endpoints we use every day.
So wrapping this up, we've covered a lot today. We've seen the threat landscape from NZIT SMEs facing those cascading risks, to critical infrastructure under pressure from geopolitics.
And then we dove deep into this critical evolution in defense, device filtering, adding that essential layer of context.
It's clear the threats are constantly changing, getting more complex.
They are, but the solutions and strategies are evolving too. That's the encouraging part. The key really is staying informed, like by digging into bulletins like this, adapting our defenses, and making security a priority at every single level.
From the individual device right up to international cooperation.
It's an ongoing cycle. Vigilance, innovation, adaptation.
Indeed. So maybe a final thought for you, our listener. In a world where maybe your password is strong, your MFA is active, but the device in your hand isn't secure, what steps can you take starting today to make sure that what you're logging in from isn't actually the weakest link in your own digital shield?
That's a question for everyone, isn't it? Technical or not?
It really is. Something to think about as we close out this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.